You're with SBS Radio.
Kasama natin ngayong umaga si Christel Diola. Good morning, Christel.
Good morning, mabuhay. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
We are having you today because you're going to be DJing at the Blacktown City Festival.
Yes, very exciting.
That's this Saturday.
As far as I'm aware, it's this Saturday. It's actually Thursday.
It starts on Thursday, you're right, yes.
Yes, we're right, but there's a whole thing going on there with Blacktown, which is very important, I think.
Yes, but it's good to know that Christel is Filipina.
Yeah. I love being Filipina, you know. I love talking about it. Like I said to you before the interview, Filipinos are, I'm very proud to be Filipina only because we are considered one of the kindest people, and we are very kind amongst our Polynesian brothers and sisters, but we are a very happy and kind and very talented race. So
yes, you've been in the music industry for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But as you mentioned off air, you don't have much Filipino friends. Why is that?
No, it's because I've moved around a lot. There's, like, I know when we first moved here, I still have Filipino friends, Filipino friends I've known for since we first moved from the Philippines. So, and I consider them my cousins, and we're still family friends. We still all, our parents still all hang out every Christmases and birthdays when they can, to, you know, to gather together, but all the kids have gone their separate ways, and but we're still in contact.
Mm.
But you know, you grow up in particularly where I grew up in a very white neighborhood, which is the Central Coast, for a huge chunk of my life. And then Coringai, went to Coringai High for 11 and 12. It's not very diverse in ethnicity, so I spent a lot of my time with mga puti.
But you cannot deny that you're a Filipino because of your last name.
Even just the look of me, you can never deny. And that's what I was saying to you. There's a lot of cultural shame to begin with when you first come from a different country and you get picked on for being the only outcast.
Yeah.
Or for being Asian, or for having, you know, whether it's slanty eyes, or for having, you know, something that is very different and against the grain. So you, as a kid, you normalize this shame, and then you develop this thing where you try and assimilate to a culture that, in the end, I've become not resistant to. I think I've become resistant to an institution more than, more than anything else. But I've come to realize how important my culture is when I turned 16, 17, and I became more invested in where I came from, what part of the family tree is what, where, you know, my mom's side of the family, he was a general in the army, and there was a lot of stories there. Used to hang out with mom's side of the family, used to hang out with, you know, presidents and their kids, and then I have an opera singer auntie who passed away when she was 21 in her sleep, and there's all sorts of weird conspiracies there. But then my dad's side of the family is, you know, from the rice fields in Antipolo, and very beautiful family, humble, and just it's an interesting way in how they met. But I've wanted to find out so much more when I was 16, 17 about my culture, and I think it's very important.
Yep. You mentioned that you grew up in a very white area when you were little. Did it really affect you at all?
In what sense? Because it certainly affected the way I saw myself as an individual. I didn't, you know, it was because of this in primary school. We went to Brisbania Public School, and it was all white. And learning how to develop a sense of self there, and knowing that I was very different, it did affect me when there were racist taunts.
Yeah.
You know. And it wasn't a lot throughout my entire life, to be honest. I'm very grateful for that. But there were certainly times where we were walking, my younger sister and I were walking down the street, Yatalunga. There was one way in, one way out at Saratoga. And we were being pelted fruits that all of a sudden felt, you know, fruits being thrown at me. And so I grabbed my younger sister's hand and I swung her and I said, run, run, yeah. You know, but there's very few instances. It definitely shaped who I am and how I see myself. And if I didn't, at the age of 16, 17, have that hunger to know where I come from and understand my own culture, I think my view on society and my view on cultures and diversity would be very skewed.
Despite having experienced those, you are mentioning that you are very proud and truly proud. You are a Filipina.
100%. Yeah.
What, now that sometimes I know that people still pick on us, what do you say to them?
I don't really say much in terms of, like, for me, I ask questions, like, you know, for people who talk negatively about another race, you know, or a prejudice or bigoted in that way, there's a background story, and a lot of it is to do with fear. A lot of it is not being accustomed to a culture. So to me, there's always an understanding that, you know, you can't always please everyone, no matter what you walk in you walk in the shoes that you were born in, the face that you have will always be the same. You know, you wear your pride in the way you approach situations, and how I think society's reflected this kind of this diversity. I think it's becoming different now. We're seeing like a cross-section across multiple industries where they're are people fighting for diversity, particularly in music, where I can speak for most especially. There is this whole, you know, there's money being injected into the Western suburbs where, you know, there's diversity in leaps and bounds. And we're seeing so many people on publications, in media publications, that are reflecting a diverse Australia. And the way I think to go about it in when there's still when you receive racism or prejudice is to always understand like where they're coming from, because at the end of the day, if they knew you as a human being, they wouldn't be saying these things. And it's always the fear of not knowing enough about the culture, or there's always that part of it, or there's always that sense of reckless bigotry and racism where they just want you out of the country. And for people like that, there's nothing to say, because besides, you know, you defending your own space, and whether that is a physical space or a verbal space, I think it's really important to actually just to reflect, you know, a positive approach to it. The only way things in society will come undone is if you poke at something that doesn't want to change. Mm-hmm. I think there's education happens when people are open and that people have an open heart, and that's where things actually, there's movement for change. And that's why you're seeing so much more of the Western culture being a hotspot for creative arts at the moment. And you know that for a fact. We're seeing so much money being injected there because people can't afford to live in the city anymore. So they're looking outside to the Western suburbs. And it's no coincidence, you know, but it's the right time to be of whatever background to express yourself, because people are watching. And that's what we do on our show. And when I, you know, speak to people in the past, it's always making sure the underdogs have a voice, because the mainstream media will not see that.
Yes.
Will not show an Asian kid who has this impressive R&B voice who comes from, you know, Vietnam or the Philippines, because they don't have a certain look.
Before DJing, kumakanta ka, Christelle?
Opo, a little bit, yes.
What sort of music do you love?
That I used to play the guitar and sing for this band called Five Coffees. I was there. It was a funk soul band, hip-hop band. There's about maybe seven or eight of us.
Yeah,
I used to sing a lot of, like, singer-songwriter stuff. I used to write my own songs and play it on acoustic guitar at venues. And then I just realized it wasn't really for me, because I didn't really have a passion for it.
after singing?
Yeah, man. Just because you can do it doesn't mean that you're meant to do it.
Yeah.
If your passion is not there, and it became a chore. I didn't like knowing that, like, the lyrics I wrote about, people knew who I was writing about. It was just too confronting. I was just like, man, let me just, you know, talk about my exes and my ex-boyfriends in a different way, not in public.
But maybe because you got the different inspiration back then.
No, I still don't. I mean, I'd sing. I possibly might put on vocals for my EP that's coming out. But, I mean, I'm self-producing that, so I'm not too sure yet whether I want to put my vocals on it or get some of my mates. Or we'll see what happens. If I'm open, if you can sing, but you said you can't sing. Do you have cousins?
You can let me borrow your voice.
My youngest sister had an amazing voice. We used to call her the Whitney Houston of our family.
Maybe she can sing it.
Oh man, she doesn't want to sing either. She's now stuck in corporate.
What happened corporate to work. You guys? You have the voice and you don't want to sing.
Yeah. I know. Maybe in the future, maybe.
Yes.
When something happens.
More pushing.
Yeah. But it's more, our direction's different now. My direction's about telling stories.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Is that why Behind the Front was established?
Well, Behind the Front was essentially established as a PR/events company. And, you know, I just happened to be surrounded by amazing musicians who are, you know, incredible at what they do. And I decided to, you know, push events, and I've done international shows as well as local acts, and really passionate about our local music scene because, you know, as much as we're seeing this diversity that's happening in the western suburbs, this hot light that's happening right now, we still have a long, long, long way to go until mainstream accepts, number one, soul music. And we're talking, you know, and jazz music, because you don't hear it on radio stations. So I essentially started Behind the Front, and then, you know, ended up working, teaming up with another PR person, and we did shows at this place that's closed down now called Play Bar, and we had ended up having a with Daniel March and this guy from Culture. It was like a top 40 artist, but we all started a night called Inner Soul, which ended up being a massive, you know, really important point in our lives, where it had India Arie's entire camp during Blues Fest come through. We had Joss Stone they weren't there, but their entire backing vocalist, the band. And we had Selection Guy, Hooligan come through because they knew about our nights. We had just an incredible amount of musicians come through to our shows.
Yes.
But yeah.
With all this collaboration and like you supporting other local artists, have you ever had a Filipino artist that you had supported before?
Yeah. His name is Glenn Lumanta.
Yeah.
Not too sure if you know about him.
Yes, we did an interview with him.
I'm glad you did, but yes. It's someone on the outskirts of mainstream media who has exceptional talent and was pulled from his YouTube links by Stevie Wonder to sing at, you know, Staples Arena. So he's a classic example of how far we have to go, because I was doing his PR and we got knocked back by a lot of mainstream publications, yet it took a blind man who happens to be a Grammy award-winning artist to hear his tone, his musicality, and say, yes, he's the one I want to take on board and fly out to the States. And that's why I say we have a long, long way to go before assimilation actually does happen here in Australia.
Mm. But Crystal, how important is it for persons like you who are existing in the music industry to support other local, diverse artists?
Oh my God, that's where I started. That's why I was such a... Do you know the... It's an interesting thing how I accidentally fell into the music industry. That's how it all happened for me. since 2008, I started an Erica Badu petition because I believed, because of the people, I was very passionate about this. I don't know how, but I felt the need to start a Facebook petition that Erica Badu should come out here and perform. And I just knew we had a soul music community, right?
Yeah.
And as a result of this, I went to my cousin's wedding in Bali. And I completely forgot about it for 2 weeks. And then I realized, oh my God, there are 3,000 people saying yes. It climbed up to 4,500 people. So I tailored 1,000 emails, 1,000 something emails. I stopped counting after 1,000. To all these people saying, hop on board, make some noise. I created a press release when I had no idea how to create a press release. I hit up all these major, you know, my network who were involved with Chug Entertainment or who, you know, were managers for Lior or who, you know, for all these people within my network. And I was like, man, I don't know what it is about this, but I firmly believe it's, you know, we have a soul music community. And from there, I fell into it with all these people from major positions contacting me. And then I was like, you know what, it's about the local music scene. It always has been about the local music scene. And as a result of that, I started putting on these shows. And whilst I was doing my own show, when I teamed up with a number of events coordinators and tour companies, and it was all about pushing local music scene. And then, you know what, 2.5 years later, Erica Badu managed to, a year and a half later actually, Erica Badu came to Australia for the first time. And that is how I accidentally fell into this whole PR thing. It was like, if no one's going to work with our local musicians, then I'm going to try and do it. But then I ended up getting distracted doing other things. But it's so important, because without our local music scene, there is no one to, like, they, our musicians can't survive. Our music industry is so myopic and very, very, you know, follow the sheep. Let's follow the leader type of thing. And it's not the most productive when we have such a plethora amount of local musicians who pass on major tours because there's no investment in our local community.
Yeah. I know that there are lots of singers who do busking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What can you say about those local artists, very young, some of them, doing busking?
I think busking is really important to, if that's how they want to do it, that's how they should do it. I don't like the fact that you have to get a permit.
Yeah.
I think when the laws changed, that's when I was like, well, that's really annoying, because, you know, it's almost policing creativity. I think people who want to express themselves on side of streets are really important, because it adds to culture, and culture is currency. Mm-hmm. Culture develops currency, whether it's spiritual currency, whether it's economic currency. It develops some kind of wealth in society and for that individual as an emerging artist to learn to deal with hecklers, to learn to deal with changing landscapes. And I think, you know, people should pay buses a lot of respect.
Yeah. For our listeners who are having doubts in pursuing a career in music, what can you say to them?
What do I have to say to them? I think make sure that music is what you actually want to do, because it's a very, very tough industry, particularly our climate. We have a culture that is about to explode with creativity, yet there are no venues. There is a particular sound that needs to be heard, or is being pushed to be heard. There is a particular look. So you have to make sure that if you know in your heart the struggle is going to be real, you have to understand that the process is going to take a while. But if you're hungry for it, the internet is on your side. So you don't need major networks. You build your community from the ground up, and you can make money out of different streams. But just understand that the process is going to be very interesting. It's going to be long. And what you see in mainstream with the gold and the chains and whatever it is, it's not that. It's a lot of hard work and perseverance and a lot of preparation to make sure that your brand is right, because you have to control that as an artist. Make sure you're the one to control that.
Yeah. Last question. What is your take on with music and culture?
What's my take on combining music and culture? I think it's really important to reflect your culture, you know, in terms of if you're going to create something, or then if that, if your culture is a part of that, then, you know, let it be free to speak. Otherwise, I think what's important is voicing your unique voice, whether it's, you know, your culture that you want to push forward, or it's a particular message that you want to push forward. But I do think it's very, you know, essential to create that space where you can express who you are, which adds diversity to sound when you produce. And it adds to a different element. So, yeah, everything is important. Everything's connected.
Yes. For our listeners who want to know more about Crystal Jola, where can they get information or follow you?
They come to my mom's house and have adobo with us. Seriously, mom and dad. You can find me on my socials, just Diola on Instagram or on FBI or, just on Facebook. My website's about to launch very soon, which dissects social truth through people's artistic practices across multiple artistic practices.
And it's called?
It's on the Behind the Front website. It's going to be launching very, very soon. So right now I've just got a landing page saying coming soon.
Yes, I'm going to watch out for that.
Subscribe, man. Subscribe. Join my mailing list.
Thank you very much, Crystal Diola.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Want to hear more stories like this? Subscribe to our regular podcasts on iTunes.